I had a horrible sleep last night, so don't expect a lot from me. I might be a little bit delirious.
I did much the same. I had the dog jump on me at 5 o'clock this morning and decided that his dew claw needed to go into my nipple.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a great one.
And I can tell you now that he's still very tingly.
Welcome to GCP Bytes, episode 1 for Friday, the 13th of September, 2024. GCP Bytes is a podcast where we discuss Google Cloud and tech. And I'm your host, Stephen Bancroft. On today's show, we get the band back together, and it's our first episode. We find out what everyone has been doing recently, and as per usual, we take a look at a few new GCP features. And are you going to get the fastest NBN plan? Plus, what's the latest in AI image generation in the AI wars? But before we get to any of that, I'd like to introduce the co-hosts of the show. You know them well. Dave Wall. How are you going, Dave?
I am awesome, mate, and I'm so glad to be back here.
Oh, mate, it feels comfy and cozy. And plus our own in-house GDE, it's Ian Brown. How are you, Ian?
I'm good, Becky. How are you guys?
Good, good. This is great. It just
this is
feels
fantastic.
Like we just slipped back into the old rhythm again.
That's it. Yeah, looking forward to getting the new show off the ground and talking some good tech.
Absolutely. Look, and you guys have been, absolute key linchpins in making this all happen, bringing the website together. Dave, we're hanging off the back of Hivetech's G Suite solution, and you've thrown the website together. We all sort of pulled together and made this all happen. It's been great to see. We work together well, and we all knew what to do. We immediately slotted into our positions, which was great.
Yeah, it was good fun.
It was
good fun building a new website again. That was great.
You did a great job, mate. It's looking really nice.
Yeah, thanks.
Absolutely, and if you want to see the website, you can go www.gcpbytes.com.au, and you'll see that there. And the great thing about it is it's all automated, right? So I can just drop the file there, publish the file, and bang, it all goes out everywhere. The only sort of manual bit I need to do is obviously the socials, the LinkedIns, and so on. But that's going to make things way easier. I thought we'd just catch up with you guys. What have you guys been up to, the last, Dave, it's been 18 months since we talked to you. What are you doing? Where are you at with Hivetech solutions? And what's the latest in your patch?
Sure. So, yeah, it's been a while since I've been behind the mic. I've been busy over this time building a small manufacturing company. We design and manufacture like rack mounting solutions for like network switches, but also a bunch of AV stuff. That's been keeping me really busy. So it's been good, but I'm very much looking forward to actually just sitting down and talking some just pure tech for a while.
And how many 3D printers you got going these days, mate?
I've got a dozen at the moment, and I'm eyeballing another four.
Wow. Garage is full, right?
Yeah, it is. I had a bunch of power upgrades put through the other day. I kept tripping breakers, so.
That's a costly problem.
Yep. Ian, what about yourself?
Mate, look, I've changed jobs. Obviously, I'm no longer at Mantle Group since I left GCP Life. And then I started at Temple & Webster as an SRE. But more on, we've got, outside of that, I've got, we've done a new home lab here out of Proxmox. I'm standing up Unify gear all through the house. I've got Pi-hole deployed now for DNS inside, because I am so sick of everything listening to me, and I'll be talking to my wife about, what's this thing that we need for our new caravan that we pick up on Monday, and all of a sudden the Facebook's just giving me ads for it.
Right.
So I block all those trackers.
Yeah, but no one can confirm that they're definitely listening, but they're totally listening.
Yeah, but no one's looking this stuff up. We're just talking about it. So they have to be listening. so we bought a caravan last week, week before. We picked that up We picked that up on Monday. We've added Starlink to the mix of that because, you know, we need interwebs when we're traveling. And I think I spent about $2,000 last night on other bits and pieces, like the auto leveling jack for the front of it, and lithium batteries for it, and a generator, little right. quiet generator.
Right. And as far as the Starlink goes, how's that all work? How's that all going to work for you?
So we've just got the Starlink Gen 3 kit, which is the one with the little sort of flick out stand on the back of it. So it doesn't have that motorized mount that takes huge amounts of power.
Yep.
And what I've done is I've actually ordered off Amazon a buck converter, so a 12-volt to 57-volt 3-amp buck converter, which is Starlink's router runs on 57 volts, which is a really weird voltage, but that's what it runs on. And so we'll be able to power that off the lithium batteries if we don't have enough juice for the 240.
Yeah, I'm wondering what 57 volts, that's interesting. A lot of older exchange equipment would run on 50 volts. There'd be a 50-volt rail in the exchange, but 57 volts is a little odd.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. The 50-volt rail in the exchanges was to account for current voltage drop because the gear actually ran on 48.
Mm.
Yeah. and then when your phone rang, they stepped that from DC to AC and it made it 90 volts. And that was what oscillated the little hammer in your phone's ringer
in the phone. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Oh man.
Yeah. 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 This is so I remember old working school. Exchange those years.
Got a bit of a liney here.
Are you on a party line or?
Incidentally, I mean, you know, that could still be relevant, right? I mean, you'll still see some Cisco gear or networking gear that's got a 50 volt connector on the back of it.
Yeah.
And that's exactly why, because the 50 volts was available in the exchange.
Yeah, a lot of the old Dell switches used to have them. They'd have a 48 volt connector on the back of it so that you could power them via a battery pack.
Yep. But no, look, myself, I'd mentioned at the last episode of GCP Life, I've got a Commodore 128 there. I've also got a Commodore 64, the old Breadbin one, and a VIC 20. None of them work. So I thought, oh, I'll crack the old Commodore 64. Because here at the new place, I've got some bench space. And, I'll crack the C128 out and have a look at it, see what's going on, turn it on to black screen. And because I've got the bench space and stuff, I had to buy myself some test equipment. I bought myself a benchtop multimeter. Oh, so much better. Like, I've got a couple of handheld ones, and they're just so inaccurate, and you've got to flip the little thing around and all that. The benchtop one just sits there. You've got the probes. Great. Loving the benchtop multimeter. Just do yourself a favor. Get one if you haven't got one. You might not think it's a big deal, but it totally is. So I'm mucking around with that, trying to get it working. Still getting a black screen at the moment. But my plan is to get that working. Now, the C128, it's a very interesting machine because it's got two processors in it, would you believe? It's got a Z80 processor, and it uses the 8502, not the 6502.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so the way it works is when you turn it on, the Z80 is what actually initiates the system, and then it hands the control over to the 8502. Because when you turn it turns on in 128 mode. Now, the 8502, that's the main chip, the main CPU, or they call it the MPU, the main processor unit, and it will run the C64 and the 128 because you can hold down the Commodore key, turn the machine on, it'll flick into C64 mode. But if you just turn it on without that, it goes into 128 mode. Additionally, if you've got a disk in the drive that's got CPM on it, when you turn it on, the Z80 will detect that and boot into CPM. So you've got like three operating systems all packed into this one machine from like the late 80s. Very interesting. In addition to that, the machine has internally an empty ROM socket. So you can burn like custom 256K ROMs, put them in there and have it do all sorts of interesting things. They're very, very cool to play around with. Got to get the thing working though. A little bit more complicated than the Commodore 64 and quite a bit more diagnosis to get the thing running. But it used to work. It was one of my last machines that was working, and I've turned it on recently and it doesn't work. So Get it going. It's going to be fun.
If anything I've learnt from watching the dozens and dozens and dozens of C64 repair videos online, replace all caps, especially the ones around the power supply.
Yeah, I have with my new benchtop multimeter, I've actually been able to go around and probe all those caps, and I've not found any problems in there. I'm getting the 5 volts, I'm getting the 12 volts. All the chips on board are getting 5 volts. That seems to be okay. The VIC-2, now the Commodore 64 uses a VIC-2 chip, but the 128 uses a VIC-2E. It's slightly bigger. It's a 48 pin a dip package, whereas the VIC's like a 40 dip package. It's getting hot. Ooh. So it could be a short in there, but I don't want to go and splurge and buy another one. I could get a replacement one. They're about $50 from the US, but I don't want to just go throwing parts at it, because you've got the problem. If I haven't quite diagnosed it and I put it in there, it could damage the new chip that goes in. So I want to make sure that I've really nailed it down. There's a couple other things. I've got the original Commodore, maintenance manual.
Oh, nice.
1984, and it gives you some step-by-steps to go through and check the reset circuit and blah, 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 blah. So I'm going through all that and trying to figure out what's going on. Now, the good thing was the drives started up. They hadn't been started for like maybe 30 years. They'd just been sitting in the thing, and I turned them on and it lit up and I could hear the thing spinning around inside. So I can't believe that the disk drive started. It was incredible. And I plugged it into the 128, turned the 128 on, and they ran the reset routine. So it's detecting the drive and everything seems to be working.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was amazing. So there's life. Cool. And Dave, you mentioned you've been looking at Chromebooks or something.
So, and this has actually worked out like quite well because there were some announcements yesterday. But so I've been eyeballing some Chromebooks because a lot of, like, besides my designs, like most of that work is all done on Fusion 360, which is either Windows or Mac. But for a lot of the other things that I do for, you know, running the day-to-day of the business, like it's all mostly just internet products, right? It's G Suite, or it's Etsy or Shopify, like it's fine. So a Chromebook would be ideal, or like a little box, especially when I'm being a bit more mobile. But a lot of them are pretty gutless, right? They're very, you know, education based devices. There's nothing sort of too nice to them.
I have one right here.
Yeah.
And it's run on a MediaTek CPU. Yeah, it's a MediaTek Companio, and it's terrible.
Yeah. So last year they announced this Chromebook Plus range, and I think that was to really kind of step up the minimum performance. I think you remember back like when Intel had the Centrino, and to be a Centrino thing, you had to have like Wi-Fi and a certain CPU.
It was like a package.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So similar thing with Chromebook Plus, right? It had to be like, there's a minimum level of a CPU, a minimum amount of RAM. Now, 2 days ago, or maybe a couple more, Intel released their Lunar Lake CPUs. Now, this is a bit of a step change. They've done a... basically, what they've done is they've put the memory on die. So it's a multi-chip module. So it's got like the CPU in there, but the memory's fixed. So you can get a CPU that's kind of got everything on board, including, say, up to like 32 gig of RAM. You can't upgrade it. However, having it so close to the CPU has really helped with like performance, and battery usage is way down. All right, so there's a bunch of these really nice new devices coming through, not just Chromebooks, but coming off the back of that, Google's just announced on September 24th is going to be the fall Chromebook lineup release. There's an event happening in New York where they're going to go through. So the 24th of September is the same day that the Lunar Lake CPUs are also available. So I'm very keen to have a look and see what's coming through there, because, like, I like Chrome OS, but I do still need, like, a little bit of a performance behind it.
I was looking at these Lunar Lake CPUs, and because they're comparing them, to a Qualcomm Snapdragon X Elite, and like Qualcomm, generally known for their ARM processors. So I was looking at these, going, these are some really high specs, and against the Snapdragon processor, they're also pretty high specs. And then AMD's got one in there as well that's also pretty high specs. I'm like, are these actually x86 CPUs or are they ARM?
Lunar Lake is x86.
Right.
They have P cores, E cores. They're pretty slick, right? So you don't have to have any ARM stuff. You don't have to have a emulation layer between the two.
Okay.
What I saw is that like Dell have announced a new version of the XPS 13, and just by going to this CPU versus what they had before, let me check the numbers. It was like 44% improvement in power usage.
Yeah. Yeah, so they say there's 26 hours of 1080p Netflix streaming at 150 nits of brightness, which is up from 18 hours.
Yeah.
Which is, that's a considerable increase.
Yeah, and that's just a chip replacement in there.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And the gaming FPS is impressive as well. 45 FPS in Cyberpunk 2077. That's a chunky
pretty
game.
Epic, yeah.
And Shadow of the Tomb Raider, 66 FPS. Now, Shadow of the Tomb Raider, even on my 3070 Ti, it works it.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. And you know, that would suit for me. Like, I don't have to have for like a device like a Chrome OS device. I don't need it to have 96 gig of RAM, and I'm not going to be running like a load of VMs on it. I mostly just want it for, you know, productivity suite stuff. Maybe I want to run a couple of, extra Linux things underneath, but not that much.
But you look at it and go, you can get it up to 32 gig of RAM on the Lunar Lake CPU. That's plenty of RAM for pretty much everyone.
Yeah.
Oh, you think so? Later, we'll talk about RAM.
I mean, even when I'm doing software development stuff and I'm running emulators and all that sort of stuff, I'm only getting up around 26 gig.
Yeah, yeah. You need 32. Yeah,
yeah.
Even if it's just for some Chrome tabs.
You know. Yeah, you've got two windows open with one tab in each. 30 gig of RAM.
So yeah, exciting time. New devices coming, and I'll be very much keeping an eye out over the next 2 weeks to see what gets released.
Yeah, give us a little mini review when you get one.
Yeah, I was going to say the really interesting thing I read about this is, in this new CPU architecture that they've got, they've ditched hyperthreading.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist anymore. It's
it was always a bit of a sham anyway.
It was.
Also, how much Intel had issues over the years with, SpecX stuff, which was all because of hyperthreading.
Yeah.
All right, then. Now, with that out of the way, should we get on with the community news and the rest of the show?
We should get out of the banter section.
We probably should. All right, let's get on with the community news. Now, Ian, you've got a couple of things coming up. Let us know what they are.
Yeah, I have. So GDG Sydney is doing a study jam next Thursday night, so the 19th. From 5:45 at Google's office in Sydney. You can register with that at rsvp.withgoogle.com. And myself and JK, another GDE for cloud, is we're training that, and there's one of the GDG Sydney organisers is hosting it. And then GDG Melbourne's DevFest is on the 5th of October. That's at the REA Group office in Richmond. Register for that one quickly. I'm speaking at that, as is one of our metal group friends are speaking at it. There's a whole heap of people there that we all know that are speaking there. And then the last one is GDG Auckland's DevFest is happening on the 10th of November, I think. I'm speaking at that one as well.
Oh, you're making the trip across the ditch?
I'm going across the ditch to go and see my friends.
Big shout out to our Kiwi friends. Cool. All right. Well, let's get on with the news items. All right, a couple of features straight out of the gate. Now, we touched on this in the last episode of GCP Life, but Cloud Run Functions, they're now available as Cloud Run Functions, funnily enough.
Well, they just added a word into it. It's gone from Cloud Functions to Cloud Run Functions, you know.
How else do you explain this, seriously? Yeah.
Look, under the hood, for years it's been sort of running on the same platform anyway.
Yeah.
So all Google's done is instead of having two products, they're just having one, and the one product does both because, well, it always did anyway.
Yeah. Now, I'm using Functions version 2 for GCP Bytes for GCP Bytes for some of the automation that we have. And yeah, sure enough, when you deploy that, you see it. You see Cloud Build Run, and it creates the container, and then a cloud run function appears.
Yep.
And you end up with both. You end up with a Cloud Run container and a version 2 function.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So, one of the things that they get with Cloud Run Functions, so the second gen Cloud Functions, which is now Cloud Run Functions, get immediate access to all new Cloud Run features, including the NVIDIA GPUs as well. So you can run stuff on GPUs should you require. Crypto mining, probably not a good use case.
Probably wouldn't be profitable if you were to go that.
No, I'm going to say not. But yeah, you get all the other features of second gen Cloud Functions in Cloud Run. You deploy it exactly the same way as you would a Cloud Function. It's just a slight change in the command that you use, but you can still deploy it directly from code. So if you've got an index.js that you want to run, just use that. Or you can build a container.
Yep. The only difference that I found, I think I touched on this, like I said earlier, if you want it to be publicly executable and you want to set it to all users, you need to give the Cloud Run invoker all users permission, because obviously it's running a Cloud Run container. Whereas if you're just using Gen 1 functions, it's just the function invoker that you have to give all users. But if you're using Gen 2 and Cloud Run, you've got to give both all users.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But one of the really cool benefits to putting it into Cloud Run is that you now get to mount volumes to it.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And you get that fuse accessibility that you would get. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can use cloud storage.
So you can have persistent.
You can have persistent data, yeah.
Yeah.
So instead of having to sort of programmatically push your data into cloud storage, you can use the underlying file system.
Get a disk and
Or get it from a database or something like that.
Yep.
You can have block storage this way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
nice. Or object storage, really. Well, I don't know. Both. The lines are blurred, right? Block storage or object storage. Cool. Look, easy to use. Go out, give it a try. Upgrade your functions to version 2. You'll be loving it.
Just a quick shout out here to JK, who actually did a blog post on this last week or the week before, I can't remember now, on his Substack site. And he showed exactly how to deploy it and how to use it, that was where I got the information from originally.
Yeah. Look, we'll link that in the show notes. Can you throw that in there, Ren? And I'll make sure I'll link that later. All right, moving on. One that's just come across my desk just at the last second here, introducing backup vaults for cyber resilience and simplified compute engine backups. Now, this is cool because this is an air-gapped backup solution, which has been sorely needed. Disaster recovery. You know, what if you're compromised and your whole project is removed?
Yeah, you have a backup project. I'll just delete the project, buy everything.
Yeah. You got, what do you got in there? You got your database snapshots, you got your VM snapshots, all in the same project, and the project is gone. No, what this will do is create backups in a separate project, Google managed one. Couple of good features here. The new backup vault storage feature, which delivers immutable backups in an ineditable, preventing deletion, indelible Securing our backups against tampering and unauthorized deletion. So they're really targeting the crypto lockers here. A centralized backup management, so it's all run from one place, and it's integrated with VM Compute Engine. Now, what's really cool, when you instantiate a VM Compute Engine instance, you can say, I want this backed up, and it just kind of does it all for you. You don't have to then go back later and have this sort of overlay hacky thing all happen, you know, all done as like a secondary third party thing. It's all integrated quite nicely.
And then you wouldn't have to have an agent then, I assume. It's going to be actually backing up at the hypervisor layer.
All done by the hypervisor layer. Yeah, absolutely.
It's all done via the API. Yeah.
The cool thing that I saw was that it's also for VMware Engine as well. So even VMware Engine VMs can be backed up via this. But I couldn't see any detail about whether or not that's agent-based.
That is agent-based. And the issue that I saw yesterday or the day before with that one is that with this latest release, the agent for a particular company, mm-hmm. the agent is crashing, and it just stops all backups. And then they've got to actually get hold of Google, and Google restarts the agent somehow, and then the backups start up again.
Right, so that's still early days on.
It's early days, but and that's fine. It's still
pre-release
because it was Actifio Go, and when we deployed it for a customer, it was still Actifio Go, and then it moved after that to Google Cloud's backup and DR, and that's where a whole heap of changes have started coming in.
Yeah. It'd be good to see them do an integration at the hypervisor layer in VMware Engine. Yeah, that would be. A killer app, you know, to get in and sort of take over the sort of Veeam space would be really nice.
Yeah, and just having it all from one central view, right? One pane of glass would be fantastic.
Yeah.
And not and having to manage a backup service.
Yeah, like that's infrastructure. Right. Like,
and having it integrated from the moment of instantiation. Like that's a big workload taken off there, right? A big burden taken off, and being able to verify that it's working from day zero.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at the whole idea of managing the infrastructure for backups, I mean, when we deployed Actifio Go, what was that, 2 years ago?
Probably three now.
Yeah, probably three now. I mean, that took a couple of days to get that up and running. It's not a small job.
No, then you had all like the actual disk that the server actually required, all the data movers and all that piece.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a lot.
Yeah, lots of cloud storage there, lots of file, lots of like block storage.
Yeah, and what are they called? Were there satellite VMs?
Yeah, so the satellites were their data movers essentially.
Yeah. Yes, very excited to see where this one goes. And, wouldn't mind. Backups, usually my eyes roll back in my head and it's just as boring as batshit, like dealing with backups. But I'm actually I'm excited and interested to have a tinker with this and get it running.
But you know what? I think it's because it is its own speciality and, you know, it's not particularly sexy. It's not that exciting. So when an opportunity comes off and they're like, well, it should be commodity. It should be as simple as like ticking a box and say, I want this backed up on this schedule. Like if it's not that, why isn't it that?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that a lot of businesses, especially small business, overlooks because it's hard. It's hard to do these days, but it's arguably as critical to small business as the actual core business is.
Mm-hmm. And you don't think about it until you actually need it.
No, that's right. It's like insurance. You don't need it until you do.
Too late then. Too late then.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's get on with a bit of industry news then. Our friends at Pluralsight, a cloud guru. Now, look, I like Linux Academy. I signed up to Linux Academy back in the day. It was good. It was Linux focused. They started to introduce some cloud stuff. Just to give you the backstory here, then a cloud guru bought them out,
and they were Melbourne based as well. They were local. Yeah.
Melbourne based, yeah. And I was a bit reticent at first, but then I got on board with what they were doing and it was great. You know, it opened up a couple of new areas for me to study and learn a few things.
I feel like the content took a step up as well. Like you could tell the difference if you were looking at legacy stuff versus the ACG stuff.
And so the content itself was good, but then Pluralsight bought it.
Yeah, and Pluralsight wasn't as good a platform. Like I had used Pluralsight before a Cloud Guru.
I think Pluralsight bought it because I mean they were very Microsoft heavy on their content. They basically didn't cover anything if it wasn't Microsoft.
Yeah, correct.
Whereas iCloud Guru was clouds of all description. So, and they just, the Pluralsight just couldn't get into that because, you know, no one wants to use Azure.
Well, and they brought the Linux angle along with them well from the Linux Academy days. But you know what? They ignored it. They didn't update the courses. They didn't refresh anything. They sacked a bunch of their presenters and educators. I follow them, a few of them on LinkedIn, and they just let it turn to shit. They really did. And so as a result, Australian Super takes a $1 billion hit on venture capital failure. Australian Super, the country's largest superannuation fund, has been forced to write off more than $1.1 billion. Now, this is an Aussie site, so I'm assuming that's Australian. In equity and loans tied to American online education startup, making it the single worst investment in venture capital.
That's a lot of money to lose.
Yeah. There's too many billions.
Yeah, way too many billions.
In this case, more billions is not better.
No, not in that case. No. I mean, it sounds like that Pluralsight itself is heavily debt laden. Obviously, they borrowed a lot of money from the markets to be able to do these acquisitions and try and grow that way. And then when interest rates kind of took off, then everyone's been taking a bit of a bath.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, debt became unsustainable.
Yeah, which I find a little odd. I mean, like, most online ventures like this sort of boomed during the COVID period, right?
But we're not in that period now.
Like, we're not in that period now. No. Maybe it's a hangover, right?
Yeah. Mm. So, I mean, you got to think back to, you know, the 2020, 2022, like that period. Like, we were still like the markets were still really high and tech hiring was very high. You couldn't get enough people. So, all these training providers to try to like boot camp people into getting like developer jobs and cloud jobs. You know, it was a big deal. It's a big market. Yeah. Then, you know, they kind of came off the boil a little bit and, you know, we saw all the like mass sackings through, you know, all of the big players. It makes sense, right? Like if you've got all of a sudden there's now more talent out there that's available, then there's less of an impetus to train new people.
Mm. Yeah, that's right.
I haven't even logged onto a Cloud Guru for quite a while. I mean, I'm just using Skills Boost these days.
Yeah, same here. I find this article, it's interesting, the numbers that it quotes in the article. Like the Financial Times reported at the weekend that a syndicate of lenders converted $1.2 billion US of the $1.7 billion US debt in equity, leaving Visa and other investors with nothing to show for $4 billion plowed into the company since 2020.
$4 billion. Where's $4 billion? Where's the $4 billion? You go to the website and it's crap.
Yeah, that's some good parties though.
Yeah, I'm sure they did.
How are they?
I don't see where they put $4 billion because as you say, the website is borderline unusable.
Yeah.
There's far better training facilities out there.
I reckon we could knock something up in a weekend, guys.
Moodle for the win.
Yeah, look, I'm not an Australian Super member, thankfully. My super's going quite good, to be honest with you.
I am.
But you are?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
And I haven't been game to log in since I saw this article because I'm
check your balance.
Do I really want to see how much money I've lost?
You know, in the scheme of things, for the amount of cash that the super funds are actually like have under management, $1 billion, like it's a big number, but just
dropping the ocean. Yeah, it's dropping the ocean. Yeah, it's more. That is more billions or a better in that case.
Yeah.
All right, then. Let's move on with a little bit more industry news. Now, this one's about Redis. Once again, the old bait and switch. When will these open source projects learn?
Yeah, look, I don't know. Redis is the latest in a long line of horrible companies that tout open source and how they love open source, and then all of a sudden the product gets to a point where it's useful and it's got a big community following, and they go, oh, we're just changing our license just a wee bit. And they've changed it just a wee bit enough that Amazon and Google have both gone, yeah, no, we're not backing you anymore. We're moving over to the fork. So we're what's happened is exactly that, the old open source bait and switch. Redis, for those who don't know, is an in-memory database known for speed and flexibility. It has an absolutely massive community behind it. It is mind-bogglingly large. It's used for all sorts of things. Session management is a really good one. It's what we use it for. Real-time data analytics and some caching if you want to use it for that as well. But they've gone from the Affero general public license, which is a very open source license that allows the software to be modified and used commercially and all the rest of it. And they've just decided that they're going to put a new licensing model in place. So the new licensing model is two licenses. So there's the Redis source available license and the Redis common clause. So this Redis source available license allows access to the source codes with restrictions on how it can be used. And the common clause license is an addition to the source available license that imposes additional restrictions by prohibiting commercial use of the software in certain commercial contexts unless the commercial license is obtained.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see here that big companies like Cloud, so Google Cloud's memory store or Redis, is a prime example of where this would be used for commercial benefit. And Google is going to be stung with this. So a whole heap of the maintainers of Redis have forked it, and they've created this new product called Valkey, which is under the original AGPL. And Google has implemented it already. It is currently available in preview, in memory store. AWS, to my understanding, I was told very reliably yesterday, AWS has already implemented it in place of Redis. So when you go to spin up a new, whatever the AWS memory store version is, it automatically puts it on Valkey instead of Redis. So you can see here that...
So is that license worse than the Terraform license change? Like, because I know Terraform was also, you know, source available. So is this, well, it's basically done, is an open tofu kind of...
Kind of switch. Because the Terraform thing was license, you know, preventing commercial, like, reuse and redistribution of it.
Yeah. So with Terraform, you can't package Terraform up into your own product and sell it. So if your product uses Terraform under the hood, you have to switch to open tofu and move on with life. And look, that's a bait and switch as well, but it's not as bad as this one. This one is any commercial use of the product needs a commercial license.
Right. What? It just flabbergasts me to think that they can get away with this. I mean, you just fork the code right there and you've got the same thing. The hypervisors have rolled it out and don't really need to test it, right? Like, it's the same code base.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, and this has been done a heap of times. Like, let's have a look at Java, for instance. Like Oracle, they took over Java from Sun Microsystems and they did exactly the same thing. And it landed them in exactly the same position. The code was forked. It became OpenJDK OpenJRE.
I was Solaris Oracle system administrator at the time when that happened, and when we had a bunch of stuff running on, app server, and it was all running in JDK, and we were able to flip it over to OpenJDK.
Yep, and this exactly the same thing happened when yet again Oracle took over MySQL from Sun Microsystems, and they changed the license on that, and of course the community did exactly the same thing. They forked it, and now MariaDB, you have to go through some steps on any Linux distro to install MySQL.
MariaDB is the go-to.
MariaDB is the go-to, yeah. Yep. So this will be one of those things that will again, it'll be a very slow decline as people sort of get off their Redis instances and move over to Valky, and bye-bye Redis.
So bye-bye Redis. The
you'll wither and die.
The skeptic in me, though, is you can. I just did a bit of a you know research on like the amount of venture capital and private equity money that was poured into Redis over the last few years. So this is probably a bit of an exit for them. Like the last funding raise I could see was like from 2021, but. This very much could be like, okay, we're going to change the license. We're going to start pulling some cash into the business now. We'll lose 90% of our customers, but we'll make more money by the remaining 10. Mm. All right, well, which is what like Broadcom's done with VMware.
Oh, yeah. It's the same thing. You have to look at where the cash flow is going, right? Mm. The cash flow is not going to be going into the new project, really, is it? It's going to, you know, Redis would have some cash flow set up and it's coming into them.
Yeah, so we'll squeeze it now, we'll get our payout, and then we'll move on.
Yeah, but I see...
Leaves a flaming corpse of Redis behind.
I see this as, that mindset is exactly the same mindset Microsoft had with companies like VMware, because we brought up VMware, and Broadcom. So back in the day, vSphere used to use Microsoft SQL to persist data.
Yep.
And then... Microsoft came along and went, no, you need to start paying for this for every install. And they went, no, we're probably just going to switch to Postgres. And that's exactly what they did.
Yep.
So I don't see, like, there's going to be some companies that will stay there because it's easy and they just don't have the talent to move it. But any company that's got the talent to move it is just going to go, yeah, look, Valky's exactly the same product. We're just going to switch that one in.
Yep.
Rip and flip.
Yep.
All right. Well, we'll be using Valky before long in Google Cloud.
Well, you can use it right now if you want.
Use it right now, exactly. All right, then. Let's get on with we had a bit of discussion about this during the week. NBN. You guys are getting – I miss out here. I miss out. Yeah.
We've got new that fiber, mate.
Plans. You got that fiber.
Sweet fiber.
I'm saying nothing because I'm still on the old ancient copper.
Copper
yes. So regular.
What's a little bit annoying about this is on my old house I had HFC, and that was great. No, I'm not complaining about the fiber to the node that I've got here. I'm actually getting a little bit more than 100 meg, but you guys are getting 2 gig.
Well, not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
No. September next year we will.
But I mean, the really exciting thing is that they've announced that they're going to be upgrading all the plans. They're adding some new ones, but they're upgrading the speed on the existing plans at the existing pricing.
Right.
That for me is like the most amazing thing because I'm kind of like I'm okay with the amount of money that I'm paying for NBN, and if my speed can get a bump without having to pay more, great.
Yeah. So, but these speed bumps only apply to households that have fiber to the premise or HFC.
Exactly.
So, like, Banky, you're still on copper last mile, which VDSL2, sadly, which means that whilst the NBN home fast plan goes from 120 to 550, you're still going to be stuck at 120 because, you know, copper just doesn't do it.
The technology can do. Yeah, that's right.
But like you know, in the background, the NBN is rolling through and upgrading everyone to fiber.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Like they will get to you.
Yeah, that's right. So
they will get here. Yeah.
Yeah. The last check that I did, so because we only just got upgraded like a couple of months ago, and look, it was a bit flaky to start with, and then things started settling down and it doesn't disconnect as many times as it does, or it did. But, yeah, last time I checked for your place, Bank, it's somewhere like July next year that you'll get it. So just in time for 2 gig, mate.
Yeah, just go straight in. You're going to go from 100 meg to 2 gig.
2 gig, great. Yep.
Yep. You know, and I'll put the NTU right in my rack here. I'll get the fiber run straight down into the rack, and we'll all be coming up Millhouse. It'll be fantastic.
Yep.
The other thing, though, that it was really cool as part of the announcement is a lot of the business Ethernet products are also getting really significant speed bumps.
Yeah.
So now this is the wholesale pricing, so you're going to pay more from any actual retailer because you know, they need to have their own bandwidth and infrastructure and stuff as well. But the, I'll just start, like, the low end, so the 500 by 500 symmetrical service is wholesaling at $300 a month. That's not big bickies.
No.
And if you go all the way to the biggest one, which is 10 gig symmetrical, it only goes to $1,000. Right? It's okay. $700 more.
To go from $500 to 10 gigs.
That's not unreasonable for even a small business.
Do you remember days of GSH DSL where you get 100-100 on GSH DSL and you'd be paying like $1,200 a month?
Oh, yeah.
I remember when we were paying Telstra Internet Direct. Telstra Enterprise Internet.
The old Telstra Internet Direct. Yep.
Yeah, we were paying them $10,000 a month for like a 60 meg service.
Yeah.
Ow.
And then one month they were like,
lines too, that would have been.
And then I remember like 1 month they were like, oh, actually for $1,000 we'll give you 100 meg symmetrical. It's like, wait, our speed can go up and we can drop out.
And our price goes down. This is not very Telstra of you.
They didn't want to tell us that. Like, it was only one kind of sniffed it out.
So the Hyperfast plan, which is what they're calling the 2 gig plan, will be available to internet retailers for a wholesale price of $115 a month. So to give you an idea, I'm paying at the moment $105 a month for gigabit, and I'm getting roughly enough gigabit. I'm 989 megasecond, I think I'm getting, which is close enough for my liking. So we'll double that essentially, and it'll probably go up to $150 a month or whatever it is that we end up paying.
Yeah. But you will need to, at that point, you're going to have to upgrade your router because there's no point plugging into a router that has only a 1 gig interface on the WAN side.
Yeah. I'm going to need to get that new Ubiquiti one with the 2.5 gig interfaces.
Yeah. Get yourself a CGU Gateway Max.
Mm.
That is a good point, isn't it? I'm going to have to look at 2.5 gig.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or 10 gig switching. Yep. Just go straight to 10 gig.
Just go straight.
Yeah. To 10 gig. Look at the Firewaller products for that. They the Firewaller Gold, I think they have some really nice interfaces on them. Also, you can run like Docker stuff actually on the appliance.
Well, wow, okay. I was just looking at it. If you've got, because Banky, you've got that whole VMware lab that you've got at home.
I do.
A 10 gig fiber NIC in that thing is only going to cost you $150 for it, for an Intel one. And then because your router is built into that.
Turn it into a Proxmox and put the router in there and you're away.
Yep, VLAN it off, 10 gig all the way in.
Yep. You know, I have never been able to make myself feel comfortable about actually doing that. Like, I really like my WAN edge to be outside of my VMware environment. I know you can do it. I know there's ways to make it safe, but I just feel like I'm one misconfiguration away.
Yeah. Look, I used to do a lot of networking back in the day, one of the network engineers that I used to work with, he said a router should never be software, and you should never use software for a router.
Nah, that's old school.
It is very old school, but you know that
have I mucked it up and disconnected everyone from the internet? Yes. Mm. Have I caused myself problems doing it? Yes.
Yep. Right? Got P1.
is it a lot easier to manage and work with? Oh hell yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because you can remotely manage it too, as opposed if you've got a physical device there.
You got to go in.
And for me, because it's underneath, like our rack is underneath the stairs, I've got to pull the fridge out that sits in front of it and then get in there and then open, get my head out of the way while I open the cabinet door.
Absolutely. That's why if I've got to do a change, right, I've got the old 5G dongle there. I just turn that on, sit that in the center of the house, and everyone's devices connect to that.
you send out a change notification. Yeah, internet maintenance, between these hours.
Yeah.
Plan change.
Well, that was what the old Cisco routers used to have, the rebooting 5 command. So you'd give it this command, like before you made a change that was very likely going to break things, you'd give it this reboot command and give it a timeout. You do your change, and if you change brick the network, the router would automatically reboot with your old
config
because you hadn't saved the running config.
Just don't write it yet.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I've got a horror story about that, but we won't talk about that today. All right, then. Well, look, enough of NBN. Another little quick one here. Google, once again, spending some bucks, $850 million US on a new data center in Latin America. It'll be the second data center in Latin America. This one's going in Uruguay.
Yeah.
Great.
Google spending more money on data centers. Yeah, great.
Well, I mean, they opened the one in Chile in 2015.
Yep.
And as they the regional director there said, to improve the connectivity of users and performance of our services. And so they're taking another step forward in the construction of a second data center in Latin America, and this time it's in Uruguay. Fantastic. Another region.
Yeah.
That I will likely never use.
No, I would say that's going to be unlikely that you're deploying any resources in Uruguay.
No, in Latin America, no, that's right. But I just wanted to call out because you know, there's constant investment going on.
Yeah, there is.
Now, you brought this next one to my attention, Ian. A new version of Android due to drop.
Yeah, so
Android. I checked my Pixel 8 and I'm on 14, but this is 15, right?
Yeah, so Android 15 was dropped the other day to the Android Open Source Project. So that is where all the other Android manufacturers get access to the new version before before it becomes mainstream. It means that for those of us awesome people who use Pixel devices, which is all three of us, you will get Android 15 in the coming weeks. But it'll likely be potentially months for the likes of Samsung and Motorola and the other manufacturers.
Yeah, well, they have to put Bixby hardware in later.
Yeah, that's right. You got to put Bixby in there so that we can uninstall it and then put your own browser and your own mail client, your own SMS client, your own phone client in there so that we can uninstall it.
Actually, I did see something the other day that Samsung is starting to push people to use the Google Message app. So they are starting to pull away from some of that.
And that's all because of RCS messaging, because the carriers won't support their version of RCS messaging as well as Google's official one.
Huh.
It's like, no, right. It's exactly the same as iMessage. The carrier's got to put something in to support that that messaging service. And so instead of having, like, you can imagine if every different company that made an Android phone put their own RCS implementation in, the carriers would have to put that implementation in for every single one, or those messages wouldn't work.
I wonder if it's something like a certificate or something that's in there.
It could be.
Like, because it feels like if it was standards-based that it should just work, but maybe there's some handshake that goes on in the background.
Yeah, man in the middle attack. Who knows? But, yeah, so Android 15 is dropping. There's a whole heap of really, really cool improvements to it. For those developers, there's a whole heap of Jetpack Compose improvements to the new version. There's a whole heap of UI improvements. There's a whole heap of security improvements. The blog post that we've got here on the Google blog has a list of the whole lot of them. There is way too many to go through here in a timely fashion anyway.
Keep an eye out for it anyway.
Yeah, definitely. I'm excited to get it.
Go check that out, yeah, and expect it to come on your phone anytime now when you see that little upgrade icon. Yeah, go for the upgrade. Enjoy the new features.
Yeah.
All right. One last item here then. Google finding themselves in hot water, and they're not going to wriggle out of it this time.
Nope, they got them.
They got them.
Yeah, the EU has pinned them.
Google loses fight against $2.7 billion EU antitrust fine.
Yeah, and this was the final appeal, so they got nowhere else to go. Yeah. And this is three Uruguay data centers worth of fine.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah, so this was one that was leveled at them 7 years ago that they've been fighting ever since. And it's one of three hefty fines meted out by the EU for anti-competitive practices.
Mm. And we have the details in this article, the little backstory on what those anti-competitive...
Look, there's not a huge amount, but it basically the meat of it is that the conduct of undertakings in a dominant position that has the effect of hindering competition on the merits and is thus likely to cause harm to individual undertakings and consumers is prohibited.
It does go on here. It says it has challenged two rulings involving its Android mobile operating system and the AdSense advertising service, basically saying they're anti-competitive.
Yeah, but those two are still outstanding. Those other ones that you mentioned there. So there's three. This particular one is for anti-competitive behavior, but
it's for their shopping thing. Shopping service.
Well, their shopping service, right.
Yeah, so in the Google search, you've got the shopping button, and this one's the its own price comparison shopping service to gain an unfair advantage over smaller European rival.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I guess we'll have to see when these other ones come through. But,
it's a lot of money.
It is. And I said three data centers.
Well,
they got the money to splash around.
But the article actually says here, Google has racked up 8.25 billion euros in EU antitrust fines in the last decade.
Yeah, that's what I was, and that's in the same sentence it goes on to talk about Android and AdSense. All right, well, no doubt we're going to hear more antitrust articles in the coming weeks, but, there's only so much lawyers and money you can throw at it, right, until you get to the High Court and then you're done. You're cooked. All right, then, let's get on with our favourite part of the show, shall we? Let's get on with the AI Wars. All right, and first thing with the AI Wars, we've got to talk about Imogen 3, Grok 2, and Flux. Now, these are new image-generating models, they've dropped in the last couple of weeks. We've got Imogen 3, which is the new Google DeepMind image-generating model. We've got Grok 2, which is our friend Melon Husk. Right. And we've got Flux 1, which is an open source one, and you can run it on your home computer. And I'm going to tell you what my experience was with that in a minute. But let's just get back to Imogen 3. Now, you can use Imogen 3 if you want to go, basically, if you're in Gemini, and you create a new chat and you say, generate me an image, blah, 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 you'll be using Imogen 3.
Yep.
Now, the caveat with that is it doesn't generate images that contain people.
No. Right? No, because of Google's famous faux pas.
Racially diverse Nazis.
Yeah, that's right.
Because it's all because of racially diverse Nazis. We can't have that, right? No. That's a bit of a caveat with that. But looking at if you just go to Imogen 3, the main page for Imogen 3, and you look at the DeepMind page, and you look at some of the images that it's creating, oh boy, they are photorealistic.
Cool. I haven't actually seen it.
It's telling me at the moment that I can only get Imogen 2, but Imogen 3 is coming out.
So I definitely get, it says, generating with Imogen 3 when I do it. Mind you, I click through from the Imogen 3 page on Try It on Gemini. So I click through that way.
Mm.
I don't know if that made any difference, but yeah, I was able to just generate an image of a pink elephant, and I've got a pink elephant with a birthday hat on.
I do like the origami photo that they've got as an example. And the prompt was a close-up photo of an origami bird soaring through a cityscape in a flock with others of different colors and patterns, casting intricate shadows on the buildings below. It was quite good. I think it missed the shadows, but, you know, it was quite good.
Yeah, okay, I'm seeing that image now. That's very nice.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, these images are stunning. The one there with the girls with the light, the sunset coming over the horizon, boy, I mean, that could be a photo. Yeah, certainly blurring the lines now, and this is available. I mean, if you're getting Imogen 3, you can get access to it. Now, along with that, we had Grok 2 drop. Now, this is Elon Musk's entry into the AI. Well, they had Grok 1 recently, but this is their entry into AI. Now, if you want to get access to this, you can go to our old friend Twitter, or X. Right? And call it Twitter.
It will always be Twitter. I still call it Twitter. You can just go to x.ai and it's got the link to try it on X.
Exactly, yeah. So if you want to get access to it, that's how you do it. Try it on X. Now, I'm seeing here on Grok 2 a subscription. Subscribe now, and you can subscribe to that. $11.25 a month, or premium is $22.50.
Yeah, right.
So it ain't free, but that's the way you can get access to Grok 2. Now, if you want to just throw all that out the window and have a crack at it yourself, you can go with Flux 1. Now, I actually did this during the week, and I sent you guys a little image of what I generated. You can go to the GitHub repo. Now, the way I did this is I wanted to run it on my Windows machine because it's got the Ryzen 7 and it's got the 3770 graphics card in there. So I did it in Windows Subsystem for Linux, and you've got the local installation steps there. Just work straight out of the box. Run the local installation steps, a couple of pip installs with a few bits and pieces, and I was able to run Flux. Now, they've got three models. They've got Flux Schnell, which is like the fully open sourced Apache license version. They've got Flux Dev, which is a non-commercial use license, and their biggest model is Flux Pro, which is only available via their API. Now, using Flux Schnell, they give a little example of a Flux pipeline using PyTorch and Python, and you can put the prompt in there, a cat holding a sign that says, "Hello world." I was actually able to successfully generate an image on my own machine. Now,
how long did it take?
Took a long time.
Smashing that GPU.
I started it. Now, funnily enough, I started it yesterday. Well, no, on Wednesday evening. Tuesday evening. It ran all night, right? And then I came here on Wednesday and I couldn't play War Thunder because my machine was all choked up.
Still cranking.
Still cranking through it. This is the kind of sacrifice I make, right? Like
all those CUDA cores going to Grok.
Yeah. And then I said, well, I'll just let it run. I could see multiple instances of Flux Pipeline running there. And I came back this morning and my computer had rebooted. Thanks, Microsoft. But I went in and checked, but no, sure enough, there was a PNG file there, and that was a file that it must have finished it overnight.
Okay, so now thinking about that, right? Thinking about how much it thrashed your PC.
Mm.
Now think about what's happening in the background of like Imogen 3 when people just go generate more, generate more, generate more, and within like 5 seconds, you've got your images.
Yeah. Now, although I do realize what I had done. I had left enable mode CPU offload on. And what that actually does is it'll offload part of the processing to the CPU and leave the GPU kind of available to the system still. So I've rerun it again just now before the show, and I've removed that option, so it'll be completely GPU processed. I'm just going to flick over here. This is live. Flick over here to my machine. Yeah, it's still running.
Did you specify device equals CUDA?
Might be finished by next podcast.
Yeah, it's.
Did you specify on the command line? Did you specify device equals CUDA? Because otherwise, by default, it uses your CPU. Well, that's what the options say anyway. So you can choose. So you got four options there. It's name, device, offload, and share. And name is just what model you want to use. Device is whether you want to use CUDA, because if you don't specify it, default CUDA if available, CPU. Otherwise CPU.
Okay, that's when you run the Python demo gr.py.
Yep.
So I'm not doing that. Oh. You can use Flux Pipeline to run the model. So cool. That little next Python script down here, and you can see there it says pipe.enable model CPU offload. Save some VRAM by offloading the model to CPU. So I've commented that line for now, and it is currently generating just using GPU.
Right, okay. Wow, right. So it's really smashing the Like, how many CUDA cores would be in that 3070 of yours? 5,888 CUDA cores in the RTX 3070.
Yep.
That's not enough.
No, evidently not.
No. But here's the thing. Something's not right because I'm still seeing one CPU thread running at 100% CPU.
So, yeah, well, it's probably still needs something to actually, like, it's going to push data in and out of the GPU.
Because the GPU would just be doing the processing of that data and then the CPU's doing the queuing.
And my GPU stats are, the GPU's not working. So no doubt I need to do a little bit more investigation into this, but it is possible. It did work.
Hmm.
And
you got a weird picture of a cat with fingers.
Yeah. I got a weird picture of a cat with fingers, exactly.
I saw that and I was like, I thought cats had paws, but, you know, fingers, sure.
The new image.
It had the right number of fingers for a human.
The new image so I'm generating, the prompt is three old men yelling at clouds.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens. Yeah, so that's the latest in image generation. Now, we also have, just while we're on that, on Grok 2, there are some numbers that are shown on the Grok 2 site, just to give you an idea of where Grok 2 is at. They're using a benchmark called ELO for Gemini Pro 1.5. The ELO is 1295. GPT-4o, the ELO is 1315, which is the best performant one. Grok 2 comes in at 1280. So, you know, they're playing the game. Haven't used it yet. Well, I'd be keen to see some other benchmarking figures. I did go and ask Gemini if Gemini could create a nice table of the comparison of the benchmarks, and it said, no, I can't do that. They're too new. So we have seen some benchmarks for natural language models before. So I'd be keen to see if someone that knows a little bit more about this does that. I'm sure a blog post will come up in the not too distant future. But in other AI news, a couple of articles that I think you dropped in here, Ian. Amazon hires Covariant founders, inks licensing deal with AI startup in latest reverse
reverse acquisition.
Acqui-hire?
Yeah.
Odd word.
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? Yeah, so they're hiring the three founders of Covariant, which is a San Francisco Bay Area startup that develops AIs for warehouse robotic systems, which means Amazon will get an non-exclusive license to Covariant's AI models. So this looks to me a little bit like they're trying to flesh out a little bit more of the robotics in Amazon warehouses to make it less human and more robot, which if it gets my package out sooner is fantastic. If it doesn't, then I'm not at all for it.
I have to say, where we are now, the package delivery is very fast. I don't understand why, but we seem to get packages a lot quicker than the old place.
Yeah, so I was promised, so I'm Amazon Prime member, and I got given this whole single day delivery. So I purchased something, not yesterday afternoon, day before, at about 6:30, and they were like, yep, next day delivery, we'll have it to you by 9 o'clock tomorrow night. And I got a message at 8:20 last night from Amazon saying, oh, sorry, we couldn't get your package to you today. We'll do it tomorrow. Why am I paying for Amazon Prime if you're not going to stick to your word?
Well, this is where Amazon Prime money's going, right?
Yeah.
Hiring Covariant founders.
Yeah.
And there's, just to take a quote from the article, I want to eliminate the mundane and the tedious and the repetitive. The chief technologist for Amazon Robotics. That was in a 2023 interview with GeekWire. I want to make things safer inside our fulfillment centers. I don't want folks to have to lift heavy boxes and crouch down on their knees or reach over their shoulders. And if we can have robotic systems to do that, that's a win for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's where everything's going in warehouses. If you can mechanize it, then fantastic.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, picking and sorting and putting things on shelves is, you know, can be organized, and it's one of those things that can be mechanized.
Yeah, well, they said in the article that, the robots are basically, picking, sorting, depalletization, all of that stuff is done by robots.
And so it should be.
Mm.
And finally, to finish up, we have a story about Tech Mahindra and Google Cloud team to boost generative AI adoption. So in this article, Tech Mahindra will also use Google Cloud's AI technology to develop AI-powered applications for critical business areas.
Yeah, so Tech Mahindra is a provider of technology consulting and digital solutions to many different industries. And they've decided to partner with Google Cloud to boost Gen AI adoption and lead tech transformation for various entities of Mahindra and Mahindra, which is one of India's largest industrial enterprises. So for those of you who think that that name sounds familiar, Mahindra is obviously the vehicle manufacturer over in India that have brought them into Australia as well. So yeah, they're going to be leveraging AI and ML technologies to do various aspects of engineering, supply chain, pre-sales and after-sales services.
And there we go, another example of AI touching another industry.
Yep.
Yep, it is. If it is not ubiquitous already, it will become ubiquitous. Every industry and everyone will be affected by AI. And look, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
The AI overlords taking over and, you know, controlling us and telling us what to do.
Sarah Connor's rolling in the grave.
Well, look, guys, that's about it for this episode. And look, for a first episode, that was fantastic. Gee, we crammed a lot in there.
Oh, yeah.
So much.
Yeah. So much. I'm seeing well over an hour here on the recording time. Look, we are on iTunes, Spotify, and YouTube Music. Go to iTunes, write us a review. That'll really help the show out. You can find us on YouTube. Go to YouTube, start the discussion there. And, of course, we've got the website, www.gcpbytes.com.au. And you can contact us as well. Gee, we've done a lot of work to get things ready for this show. contact@gcpbytes.com.au. And, of course, today's sponsors were Hivetech Solutions and Mantle Group. That's about it for us. Anything from you guys?
Nah, cracking first step.
Yeah, yeah, just time to go and get back to
yeah,
work.
Yeah, I got a meeting in 3 minutes.
Yeah, it's just about 9 o'clock, so let's get back to work, guys. I'll catch you later. See ya. Bye.
Bye.
Catch ya.
Yeah, I mean, I understand AppArmor needs to stay there and you really should have it running. But if it's going to block my workflow and not tell me that it's blocking my workflow, then it's gone. Mm. And if I can't uninstall it, then the desktop's gone. The entire operating system's gone. I go to something else.
Baby bathwater.
You're all or nothing, yep. Aren't you?
Yep.
He's a binary man.
Yep, very much.